Welcome along to another D Word podcast. Whichever side of the fence you observe from, it's fairly clear that the social care system in the UK is broken, which means there's an increasing onus on private companies to provide quality care. And that's what Vida Healthcare do in their three homes, which have all been designed for people living with dementia. My guest this week is Managing Director James Ryecroft. Well, James, it's great to meet you and have you here on the D Word. Plenty to talk about. I guess start at the beginning. Just tell us a little bit about yourself and your role there at Vida Healthcare.
Well, hi, Pete. Thanks for having me on. It's nice to be here. Vida Healthcare. We are 10 years old. Well, we're slightly older than that, but the reason why I say that is we started trading about 10 years ago, and we design, develop, and then operate care homes for people living with dementia. And we've currently got three settings up in Harrogate. And yeah, we set out in 2010, actually, with the vision that we were going to focus solely on caring for people living with dementia and through each stage of their journey. Because we found that that was an area that was lacking around where we are, at least, because the normal care home, if that's the right word, will offer residential care, nursing care, and dementia care. But there comes a point where often the person's journey becomes too complex for that particular setting, and that's when they come to us. So I found that that was disruptive for someone living with dementia. So we thought if we go in and take that individual all the way through, then that would be a much more appropriate and holistic way of looking at care.
Yeah, and I think it, you know, to me, it still is, you know, rather an original model. One of the things is generally when you go and look at a care facility, I don't know if I'm right in saying this, but I think I am. People look at the standard of care, don't they, which is absolutely right and natural. But one of the things that probably they don't look at, they look at last, is the design of the premises, which can be equally, if not more important.
Especially for people with dementia. We know that putting someone into, there's loads of things that you can do which you don't expect, but you can do, and it's proven that have a direct impact on people's lifestyle and well-being. For example, if you're building a building from scratch, we separate our, so we have large buildings. We've got one building that has 100 bedrooms in it, another that has 124, another one that's slightly smaller and has 70. Even so, all of them quite big buildings. But what they are is they're broken down into really small houses. So, for example, well, we've got 20 smaller, what we call sort of self-sufficient independent houses. But they're all really similar in design and layout. They all have a continuous walkway. And that continuous walkway means that people never come to a dead end, which can often promote anxiety. And along that route, there are the bedrooms and the communal settings and different destinations. You know, people with dementia, it's widely known that people like to walk and walk continuously. You know, if you break it down to real basic design, you and I would walk along the corridor in a hotel and get to the end of that corridor and turn around and go back the other way if we so inclined. But sometimes that can create, a dead end can create anxiety and heightened behaviours. So what you try and do is you there's no distractions. You continually walk, and along that walkway there are destinations, and that allows you to be as sociable or as private as you like to be. Because that's the other side of things, is that, you know, irrespective of whether you're living with dementia or not, if you are going into a care home setting, you are going into, in the main, a communal setting, and we've lived independently all of our lives, and it's a massive cultural shock. So we try and create these environments that are more suitable to people's needs. So there's a lot of things that you can do with design, but the principle is that we have many different smaller care home settings, all designed quite similarly, similar artwork, similar decoration, similar paints, similar flooring. And as your needs change, that means you can moved to a different house, which is very similar in surroundings, but just with a different skill set of staff, for example, and the same demographic of individual, which matches where you are on your journey with dementia. So there's a synergy there. And most importantly, you get continuity of care in familiar surroundings, albeit slightly different houses, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes absolutely perfect sense. And I guess it's all about the fact that, you know, there is no one-size-fits-all solution, and particularly when you're talking about dementia. You know, the old saying, probably said it 100 times on this show, when you've met one person with dementia, you've met one person with dementia.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's so true, that, and that's why, you know, I always use, it's, you know, it's not an exact science what we do. It is all about individuals. You know, just because you have dementia doesn't mean to say you have don't have individual needs. You know, there are lots of design elements which are proven to work, but they don't work for everyone. So we try and create the best environment that we can, that we know has worked for us. And then that's supplemented by care. And the carers, and how we devise our care plans for that individual. And we all know about person-centered care. And I think that's, I might be wrong. I might be being a bit cynical here, but I think that's a word that's used, but not necessarily done. True person-centered care is obviously about the individual, understanding the individual and understanding every aspect of that individual's life. And in order to achieve that, you have to talk with everyone around that individual, in particular the family who have known them for the longest. Then you can talk with social workers or external stakeholders that might have experience of this person, and of course the individual resident. All of these things come together in one sort of cluster of knowledge, which allows us to provide a care package that's sort of alongside the environment that people are living in. And that's how, and those are often the really small things that can make people's day, you know, and that's about routine. And that's about, I don't know, delivering the Times newspaper to them at 9:30 a.m. because that's where, what they've always done in their life. These small things, let's not take those away, and let's try and make life continue in along a normal path as it did previously to coming into a home.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
This is the D-Word podcast with my guest, James Ryecroft from Feeder Healthcare. I guess the other important thing as well is, you know, not everyone living in dementia is over 65. So you know, you've got a younger element as well.
We do. We recognise that there are, obviously, sadly, people under 65 living with dementia and quite advanced dementia in certain straight. That comes with a whole different dynamic often, because what you may have is somebody who is physically very fit and very strong, but sadly mentally not as capable, and therefore it creates a different environment for care. And therefore what we found is that we've got, it's not actually for people that are just under 65, it's for people that are younger minded as well. So we all know that somebody might be 70, 75, but still sort of, you know, singing and dancing and behaving like someone in their 50s. You know, there's lots of people out there doing that. So I don't want to categorize it and go, you are young if you're under 65, because that's not the case. It's about what goes on in your mind. So we try and bring people together that are of that similar mindset and life that they live in. And it's getting the dynamic of the group of residents right is really skillful for our managers to do. And what we find is that each house that we open, that we have in each of the homes, they all have their own personality, and the managers and the admissions team, they all know this and go, okay, you know, James would be perfect. We know that this, that James is how he's presenting at the moment, where he's on his journey. He would be perfect for West Park, for example, or whatever it is. But getting that dynamic of residents right is really, really fundamental and key. It's a hidden talent.
And I think it's something that, you know, you were saying earlier on in the conversation, the, if I can use the word traditional, you know, my mother-in-law was in a care facility which was residential nursing, dementia floor, and really the ability there to subdivide that dementia community again didn't really exist, because it was people living with dementia went on to floor two. But obviously, you know, you've taken it one step further, haven't you, and divided that dementia community into its own little subsets.
Yeah, and for us, that's our model. I do want to say, by the way, you know, normal or whatever the word is, care homes are doing amazing things. And it's just a different sort of take. We don't do residential care and we don't do nursing care. We only look after people living with dementia because that's what we've decided to do. But for us, the key is that continuity of care, that I think also for families as well, if they come to VIDA Healthcare, they know that we can look after that their loved one all the way through their journey. They never have to leave if they don't want to. And we find that that very rarely happens, i.e. to move to another care home, for example, very rarely happens because we've got that skill set. And I think, you know, the important thing also to mention is the training of all the staff. You know, we kind of empower our staff with the label of being specialists in their field, because they are, you know, and it's a very important skill set for them to be empowered with, but it also allows families to sleep at night, I think is the word, because they know that they're in capable hands. And we also include the families in day-to-day life and general. You know, we're a team. One of our values is called In It Together. And because without that, I don't believe that we can provide the care that we aspire to do and that the residents deserve and that the residents' families demand. You know, we've got to work together to provide a holistic approach to this and understand the individual. It's very, very important that.
And, you know, when it comes to staff, it's a really tough job, isn't it? And a very dedicated job. Is it easy to get staff?
No. it's got easier. Obviously in the pandemic, it was very difficult and we had the national staffing crisis. But at that time, I think it was in November 21, we sat down as a team and said, you know, if we, you know, even more so for us, it's to have that familiar face, consistent staff in place. That's part of what we do. So we made a decision that we actually we created a whole new strategy for the business. And that strategy, which was a risk, was to, we needed to increase wages, frontline care staff's wages by 30%. We thought that that would be bold and that would be commercially the right thing to do. And also because people deserve it. But we had to remodel, which meant increasing fees. Interestingly, we didn't get any complaints about increasing the fees when we told people that that money was going straight into the staff's pocket. So there is that side of things, obviously, which is now we hardly have any deficits in our staffing. And we have currently a 4%, actually, sorry, it's 3% average this year turnover of staff, which compared to Skills for Care have just released the turnover rates, which has come out at 30%, which is actually down by 2% on last year. So the industry's retention rates are getting stronger, but still 30% turnover is awful. Not only because it creates, you know, massive dents in your care provision and that continuity of care, but also it's a very, very expensive exercise to replace people. So we feel that we've got that right now, finally. But also it's just about looking after staff and listening to staff is the crucial bit. Good communication and listening to them, hearing their voice and, you know, and developing staff and offering them career paths, genuine career paths, so that they can see the future and the longevity of their careers with VIDA. And that's, you know, like it sounds odd because it would appear that every other industry is doing that, but it's not necessarily happened in social care to a certain extent. You know, I'm not criticizing social care on any level because, but I do criticize, and I don't want to get political in this, obviously, but it's, you know, there is not enough money pumped into social care, and it is continuously seen by the government, you know, as second to the NHS. And my sort of saying about all of that is that the NHS needs social care just as much as social care need the NHS, and it's massively important. And until the government see that, genuinely see that, and don't just sort of shout about how important social care is, but actually never do anything about it, really, you know, it's always going to be a struggle, and we're always going to be shouting for more money. And, you know, I think what we need to do is try and be a bit more creative and try and search for efficiencies within our organisation so that, you know, that we don't hang on for the government's, you know, investment in us, because it's like wading through treacle.
Yeah, what's the kind of mix that you've got between private residents, if I can call them that, and publicly funded residents?
Well, that's changed massively over the years. Now, funnily enough, I did some analysis on this last week. Average, we've got between 65 and 70% funded now. The difference is that it doesn't matter whether you're funded or a private fee payer, you pay the same amount at VIDA Healthcare. And the reason for that is because we're specialist care, that's what it costs, and I can't afford to not run it in the way that we run it. So it makes us quite unique, really, I think, because we don't have, you know, one level of a fee for the funded side and an enhanced level for private. You know, it doesn't seem fair that either, but I just can't run the business in that sense. It doesn't work for us financially. So we're quite lucky in that respect. But it's a question I get asked all the time from the bank and, you know, the more corporate side of the world. Oh, what's your ratio? What's your ratio? I'm like, well, it doesn't really make any difference to us. So, yeah.
Yeah, but I guess that, you know, local authority commissioners anyway in your area have bought into the VIDA thing because you're getting people they're resident with you. And I just wonder, you know, if there were other local authority commissioners in other areas that were exposed to your kind of model, then they may look a bit more kindly on things.
Who knows? I mean, it's taken us a long time to build up that go-to thing. And we, like I mentioned earlier, we have morphed as a service into more acute care. So we are taking people direct from the acute sector, the hospitals, etc. And they are often residents that present, as I've said earlier, with really complex behaviours, and perhaps those that other care homes around us might not take because that's not their service that they provide. So I think that puts us in a unique position. It's an interesting one, but, you know, it's one thing I do know is that it's much more expensive to keep someone in an acute setting than it is in a social care setting. But those two budgets are very different. So it's difficult to, well, It's difficult to marry those two up because the two budgets are totally separate and run by different sides of the public sector. I'm verging, aren't I, on getting slightly political, and I don't want to get political because, you know, that's not really who I am. Yeah. But I can't help edging towards it slightly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
My guest on the D Word podcast this week is James Ryecroft from Vida Healthcare. Yeah, I think, you know, even for me on the outside, it does seem that the NHS and the social care, they just mould and morph into each other because, you know, one can't survive without the other. And, you know, I don't think that's a political statement. I think that's just a statement of fact of looking at it from the outside.
And it's the right way to look at it, you know, and it's a holistic service. And you saw in COVID how much, you know, if you just think of the clap for carers, initially was clap for the NHS, and then it moved out to be clap for carers because it was started to be recognized that social care, i.e. care homes, were a real you know, part of fighting this whole horrendous infection. And we helped each other and worked together, and it worked really well. And the government sort of stepped up and seriously helped both sectors out. And that was great. Just not quite sure if it's still happening, but we can live in hope.
Absolutely, yeah. Sadly, it sometimes takes a crisis, or in that case, a global pandemic, doesn't it? Move on to another. Well, actually, this might get a bit political. Let's move on to another subject. Sustainability is something that's now on everybody's lips. Mm-hmm. Everybody has looked at in terms of sustainability. I mean, you know, how do you feel about that with the care sector?
I think it's great, and I think it's misunderstood, and I'm kind of a bit of a champion of this at the moment. So, you know, let's not forget that CQC are going to start to regulate us on this now. When the single framework comes in, there's a WE statement, which I've got somewhere on my desk, but I don't know it off by heart. But it basically is saying that we need to be working towards running a sustainable business, and so we should be. But I think what we sometimes fall into the trap of is that, you know, that sounds expensive. That means let's put a load of photovoltaic or, you know, on the roof, which can cost a lot of money. Actually, what we're talking about is creating policies that are in-house that makes your business more efficient and greener and sustainable. So that might go down to the simple. Well, they sound simple, but things like turning lights out, turning the heating down a degree, turning off the air conditioning, you know, going paperless, all of these things have a massive impact on the running and therefore saves you money. And you know, it goes on, but there's food wastage. And let's look at all of those first and create some policies and strategies around those, because that's what can make us more efficient. And just as individuals, we should be doing that. But the other thing is, go back to retention. You know, I recently saw a report that was really, it kind of took my breath away. And it's not based solely on social care, this, but across industry. And they were saying that, you know, especially the younger generation, i.e. 18 to 35s, it's massively important to people. And they will judge companies and may even leave a company if their sustainability policies are not good enough or not in line. So this is, you're right, because it's a massive thing. Banks now are looking at, certainly investors in businesses are looking at ESG because it shows a level of forward thinking and future proofing of the business, and they're going to buy into something that is efficient. Cost of living crisis, the utility bills, you know, everything going through the roof. Let's find really creative and innovative ways of streamlining our businesses to save us money. Well, if you say the word save money and streamline, and it doesn't actually cost me anything or affect my service, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? So it's really, really important, actually. So I've been looking into it an awful lot, and we've just signed up to get our carbon footprint calculated so that we'd know exactly what we need to do and how we can make ourselves better. And, you know, there's a level that we can go to. And at that point, if we want to go carbon neutral, then we have to, you know, invest in something that offsets the rest of our carbon footprint. Because, you know, of course, we are going to be burning fuel. So, but yeah, it's a really massively important area. And as I said, this report that I got sent through came out with all sorts of things. But ultimately, it was also saying that if you had that ESG thing, so I said people would leave, but the flip side of that is that it helps with retention.
Mm.
You know, I know I'm stating the obvious there in terms of repeating what I was saying earlier, but yeah, it helps with retention. So can save you money, helps with retention. We need to step it up.
Why wouldn't you do it? It does kind of seem like that. And I guess now, you know, we've got technology to help us as well, haven't we? You know, maybe 10 years ago we didn't have.
Yeah, there's a lot of things out there that, and it's getting better and better. And it's not, you know, the technology side of things. You know, we there's lots of operators have gone to, you know, small things like going to the e-care plans and the e-medication plans, the EMR systems, you know, that means no paper. But it also means more efficiency in my mind and my experience, which means, you know, you can offer the CQC much more transparency in terms of looking at care plans, but also it's quicker and therefore you can spend more time holding people's hands, which is really why we get out of bed in the morning, to look after people. And spend quality time as opposed to filling out paperwork all the time. So all of these things are not only good for the environment because it's paperless, but it makes you more efficient and more transparent.
Well, you know, I guess in terms of care also, we've got a lot of technology that can really, you know, really help there. You know, now if I want to listen to a jazz record, I just ask Alexa to play it. You know, we can have all those kind of things as well.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? And we use all of those technologies. I've just had a company in that effectively offers a service which is similar to Netflix, but for care homes. And when I say that, I mean, if you want to watch the 1966 World Cup final at the flick of a switch, then you can. Or the, you know, the Bjorn Borg McEnroe final in 80. I'm not as geeky as I thought it was. Is it 80? Whenever it was. Anyway, it was a long time ago. You can watch it. So, you know, we're bringing in things like that, which is, you know, really good use of technology, I think. And we're bringing in monitoring systems, which, you know, monitor a room, which means we can predict falls a lot quicker. You know, we all know falls are, you know, very detrimental to people's health. So we, you know, certainly technology is the way forward. ESG, massive, and a really easy way of getting forward. But I just think it's a bit of misunderstood, the ESG side of things at the moment. But I think it's exciting times in social care, and I think technology is the most exciting thing because it just offers so many solutions, and it makes things so much easier as well. You know, we're really heavily regulated as a sector, and so we should be, you know. But what we need to try and do is be as efficient as we possibly can and transparent as we can, because we just need to enjoy the residents and give them the best life. So that's why we can surround ourselves with tools that make that an easier process. I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think, you know, sounds like my kind of world, that does. Make things as, you know, as easy as you can. Coming to the end now, I just want to mention the Outstanding Society. I was wondering if you'd tell me just a little bit about that.
Oh, the Outstanding Society is something that I helped found back in 2014. And really, the rationale for the Outstanding Society is to be a positive voice for social care and also a platform where we can all share best practice, because we know that there is enough, or there's not enough beds in this country. So we're really not in competition with each other. What we need is to learn from each other and drive the sector forward and be a real positive voice, because there's a lot of, there's a deficit of beds in the country. We're not in competition with each other. We need to share best practice and we need to share our stories with each other, because that's how we drive things forward and improve quality. So that's what the Outstanding Society is there for. It's going great guns at the moment. We're involved with all sorts of fabulous things. So we are working with UCL on a research project called the Vivaldi Project, which actually helped all the way through the pandemic by defining the guidelines. So what they did was testing in care homes of a monitoring of statistics in care homes and data, so that they could go, well, actually, we know that if you cohort staff into a certain area and keep them there, the infections are lower. So that's where all of the guidance or paying people. So the government, you know, paid sick pay while someone had COVID, because otherwise they'd come into work and spread. All of these guidelines came from this research program called Vivaldi, and that's now expanding out to cover infections as a whole. So we can monitor infections like norovirus and flu and COVID, so that we can monitor them and see what the patterns are, with a view of reducing those and getting rid of them a lot quicker and being much more efficient. So that's one area that the Outstanding Society are involved with. We are involved with, well, we work with the CQC quite a bit. We work with Skills for Care an awful lot. We do the care shows, but ultimately, and we have our monthly webinars that we do, which again, it's a chat exactly like we're having with various panel members, often people from the board of directors, but then people from the CQC, for example, or other providers. And we sit there and we chew the cud and share experiences and talk about topics that are slightly different to what's been talked about in, you know, the normal sort of state of social care world. You know, it's not, that sometimes different subjects come up and we jump on it and we go for it. But we have these really proactive webinars, which are really interesting. So, yeah, really pleased about the Outstanding Society. We've just received some nice funding to keep us going. So, yeah, it's a very, very, in fact, I'm very proud of it. It's a very progressive society to be involved with. And the Outstanding Society is there not for people that are just outstanding. It is there to help people achieve better ratings with their CQC, with the CQC, you know, and that's good, with the ultimate aim of being outstanding. So that's what we try and do.
That's a very positive place to end, I think, James. It's been great. Really enjoyed talking to you, and hopefully we can catch up again.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Sometime
I'd love
next
that.
Year, and chew the cud on something else, because
why not?
I think it's always great to talk about these things. So thank you so much for being my guest on the D Word.
Thank you.
Many thanks to James for a fascinating chat. And if you want to find out more about Vida Healthcare, it's all on the website at vidahealthcare.co.uk. That's it for another edition. Hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll join me again soon for another D Word podcast.